This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. Underwear drawers are like the Wild West. You never know what you're going to pull out or what shape it's in. So upgrade your collection with the buttery soft comfort of MeUndies. MeUndies' signature fabric is as soft as a warm hug from your favorite sweater. Plus, it's breathable and oh so comfy, making it ideal for all-day wear. Get 20% off your first order, plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/Spotify with code Spotify. That's MeUndies.com/Spotify, code Spotify.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way, and we have a lot to discuss. It's just the Trump era. I probably will start every show for 4 years like that, especially because we're coming from a presidency where the guy wasn't involved, wasn't talking to the media, trying to pass massive bills on pure party lines, and well, he would take credit for it, but you know he had nothing to do with it. The Inflation Reduction Act, whatever he called the rescue plan. He did gun control. I'm trying to think what else he did. Infrastructure. So he got, but he had nothing to do with it. It was all done beneath him. And then his foreign policy was absolutely awful. And as President Trump said, he left him a mess. Mark Thiessen coming up at the bottom of the hour, the Washington Post columnist, and Brett Baer standing by. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
But the actual idea of allowing first Gazans who want to leave to leave. I mean, what's wrong with that? This is the first good idea that I've heard. It's a remarkable idea.
That is Prime Minister Netanyahu appreciating Trump going out of the box with a plan for Gaza. He offers that plan and the world flips out. I am intrigued and see the long game. And at least one Democrat agrees with me.
Number two.
The president, who's made the offer today, then we'll be working on the details of all of this, but the offer to increase these flights, these deportations by 40%. It's very important for us in terms of the migratory situation that we're facing.
Yep. Senator Marco Rubio making some progress in Guatemala as well as El Salvador. They are going to take back illegal immigrants from their country and other countries. The border crackdown flat out a spectacular success. Not without its challenges, though. Numbers don't lie. Other nations are stepping up to help.
Number one.
What Elon Musk is doing is illegal. It is a coup.
We're not going to have apartheid in America anymore.
Who are these people, and what do they realize they have a microphone and don't have to scream? Doge driving Dems crazy, but they shouldn't be celebrating. I am. The most impactful agency that I have seen so far in my lifetime. Can we get to a balanced budget by examining what we're spending? The answer, I think, is yes. Brett Baer joins us now. He's set to interview the president on Super Bowl Sunday. It's going to air at 3 o'clock, the rest of the interview, because Trump will go long. We'll be on Special Report on Monday. Brett is also featured in a Super Bowl commercial. Brett, welcome back.
Hey, Brian.
A lot going on Super Bowl Sunday. I mean, the backdrop is Kansas City and Philadelphia. I think the real story is Brett Baer.
It's going to be good. We're going to tape that in Mar-a-Lago Saturday afternoon. And he's obviously going to the Super Bowl. I think it's the first president, sitting president, to attend a Super Bowl, which will be in and of itself kind of a moment. But, yeah, I mean, I'm getting questions ready, and part of it, a portion of it, you know, roughly eight to 10 minutes will air on the pregame show, probably around 3:30 or 3:40. And then the rest, and I'm assuming we'll have another 30, 40 minutes, will air on Special Report on Monday. So potentially a lot of news coming out of that interview.
I know the President of the United States, I mean, nonstop. Yesterday was Let's Keep Women in Women's Sports Day. There was also Pam Bondi has the job as attorney general for about an hour and decides to stop all funding towards sanctuary cities, sanctuary states. That's impactful. But the big story is Elon Musk. And he's able to go through the treasury. He's able to go through human resources, look at how the size of the federal funds laced together, put them all on an email, $2.3 million, offer them buyouts. And Democrats are going crazy. Here's Elon talking about Doge's impact already. Cut one.
Although it is a humorous name, ironically, I think Doge will have a very serious, and significant impact on government waste and fraud and abuse, which is really astonishing.
So, and he's talking about shutting down USAID. That was not his decision; it was Trump's decision. And he says it's a den of vipers. He's also told everybody, you can leave in 6 months. I'll give you 6 months' pay to leave. And even in the CIA, everybody can leave if they want, and a package, an exit plan, will be offered to you. Why do you think Democrats are losing their mind on this?
Well, first of all, it's out of the ordinary. We've never seen an outside government entity that is digging into government. And Congress feels like it's their oversight role. They feel like, you know, he's a wolf in the chicken house, and he is. Listen, it's a pretty dangerous thing to be defending all of this waste, fraud, and abuse that they're putting out every day. You know, it's not the reports of where the money is going. It's actually where the money is wired, where the checks are actually going. And sometimes that's a big difference. We are always one election away from solving the big things and trying to cut out waste, fraud, and abuse. How many times do we hear politicians saying, I really want to go after waste, fraud, and abuse? This is going after it. Now, how it's happening, is he empowered? Does he have clearance? What about the guys? Are they going down classified things? They say there's a dichotomy there. There's a split, and the right people are doing the right things. Democrats are losing their minds over it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, they tried to subpoena him yesterday and never got out of committee. And last night, I guess they had an all-nighter petitioning DOGE. But what they're actually protesting is flat-out bizarre. Also, cutting down the size of government, it's necessary. I mean, it's very simple. Even I could figure it out. If your number one expenditure is the interest on the debt that you accrued, and every year, now we're over $1 trillion over budget every year, of course you have to cut. You can't grow yourself out of anything like this. And he says, the real savings is going to be when he gets into Medicare and Medicaid, and he's doing that now, not to cut benefits, but the dead people and the fraud, Brett. How I just don't understand. If you were originally going to get behind DOGE, if you're Jared Moskowitz and Ro Khanna, why would you leave now?
Pressure from your party. I mean, they're trying to grasp onto something to message, and they think this could be it. I just think it's a dangerous thing politically, because I think there's a hunger to get rid of the silliness of government. You know, I mean, we're not even talking about the Pentagon. When they go into the Pentagon really deep, there will be, you know, $40,000 hammers. There will be all that stuff. It's in there. And those budgets are crazy. And so that'll happen too. But the flip side is you have to find the money. If you want to extend the Trump tax cuts, it's without pay-fors. It's about $4 to $5 trillion on the national debt. And, you know, if you want to increase the defense spending for shipbuilding, you're going to have to find that money. And that's, you know, the process they're going through right now.
Okay. I just want to give people at home an idea that Democrats are protesting. Gender diverse support in Bangladesh, 1 million, 7.4 million Syrian democratic political processes. There is none. And by the way, the guy in charge is now a former Al-Qaeda guy. He's an alumnus. 1.9 million for Guatemalan transgender support, Honduran LGBT group, 1.8, 1.5 for Serbian gay group, 70,000 DEI musical in Ireland, Caribbean LGBT group. So this is what they're putting forward. Now, if there was a group that was pro-life in El Salvador, I also don't think we should be funding that. And Republicans should point that out. You know, we're going to find all this stuff.
Eventually that adds up to real money. You know, I mean, you find enough of those, it's going to add up to a significant chunk of change. And, you know, all of these folks are saying you're going to kill aid, and China and Russia is going to come in and take the position of the U.S. and change our dynamic around the world. It's not to say that all the U.S. foreign aid is going away. It's just going under Marco Rubio, and they're doing a scrub of what is in the U.S. national interest, what is beneficial and what is not. And that takes time to go through, but it would fall under Rubio under the current plan.
So you always hear stuff, and you do it every day. You're in Washington, deep state, deep state, deep state. Well, we're about to dig in to find out who's financing it and if there is one. So Michael Schellenberger, by the way, is at the University of Austin, Texas, where he's a professor this year and a founder. He said this about to Jesse last night, just to remind everybody how this all was functioning with USAID and the CIA. Cut 14.
You might forget that, you know, the House of Representatives impeached President Trump in December of 2019. Many people may not remember that it was a CIA analyst who was left over from the Obama White House who wrote the memo that led to the impeachment. It was all based on hearsay. The person had not actually been in the room with Trump. This memo that he wrote relied heavily on a report done by an organization funded by USAID. In fact, its initial founding funding, I mean, now it's tens of millions of dollars, had gone into this group called the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project. But it was basically created as an extension of the State Department and then of USAID. And as you know, Jesse, this is very serious to be involved in an effort to do regime change at home.
That I mean, that they're playing a role. And USAID evidently stiff-armed Senator Joni Ernst last year when she wanted to find out what they're paying for. They said you have no right to ask.
Yeah. So Rubio talked about this with Rich Edson in that interview in San Salvador where he said, we tried to engage with USAID and they said, we don't fall under you. We are an independent agency. And in reality, it was created in an executive order by John F. Kennedy. Congress stepped in and shored it up in the 1980s, but it falls under the State Department. And they essentially were saying, we don't answer to you. So for all the deep state people, there's a lot of evidence that the CIA and other organizations use some of that money in different places around the world to impact our intelligence and operations tangentially through some of that aid.
So we have cost cutting and all those federal governments were told they could leave. The FBI, too. So with the FBI, there was some clarification yesterday that said if you were involved in the case and the indictments of President Trump, basically resign. And they clarified that. So there's going to be people let go before Kash Patel possibly has the job. But if you were involved in the case and just following your instruction from your from a superior officer, you're not going to be fired. Are you hearing the same thing?
I am, and that's a good clarification because, you know, it's a hierarchy. You answer to your leadership, and if you are on an investigation that dealt with January 6th or the fallout around the election investigation, you're doing that under orders. And so I don't know how it's going to break down, but they did, I think, walk that back as far as that they're going to be leaving.
All right.
Thousands of people.
So Brett, the Super Bowl ad looks really good. It looks for you and Sean are in it. Was it fun?
It was fun. It's amazing, those ads. You know, they shoot it 700 different ways. And there's a blooper thing on Ad Week where we both forgot lines. There's only 15 seconds of stuff. And we were like, wait, do I start? You know, so it was good. We had a good time with it. And it's pretty fun.
So
tough for me. It was tough for me to wear an Eagles jersey as a Commanders fan.
I know, you're a huge Redskins fan. But Brett, now let's talk about, you don't have to give away your questions, but do you have a specific approach to this interview? I mean, you know, by Sunday, sometimes what he says on Saturday is old news. So how do you approaching this?
Well, that's why we're going to do it as late as we can on Saturday, because maybe, just maybe, he won't make news between 6 p.m. and the next morning when he leaves for New Orleans. But it's not a guarantee. I think, listen, it's going to be a mix. It's a Super Bowl interview. It plays to a much bigger audience. But there will be a lot of news that deals with the news of the day. The special report part, it'll get more weedy about, you know, his plans and, you know, much more to a special report audience.
Right, and you have Prime Minister Netanyahu came on this week, and it was one of the few times. I always think Netanyahu is two steps ahead of all of us. You know, whatever he thinks happening, he knows the American media. I feel like Trump got ahead of him in a lot of the things he was saying in the meetings. Everything from saying out of the nuclear deal. We're going to pull out of the Human Rights Council and the UN. We're going to pull out of UNRWA right away. We're not pushing for a two-state solution. We are going to have all maximum pressure on Iran. I almost felt like if Netanyahu's jaw could drop at the end when he said, will make Gaza an international zone and maybe America will take it. I even thought that caught Netanyahu by surprise. What does your reporting say? Did he catch him by surprise with that?
I think so. There was some talk about it, and I'm told, behind closed doors. What he did is change the paradigm. The two-state solution, you start not talking about that. You start talking about this crazy idea that the U.S. is going to control Gaza, and does it include U.S. troops and all this stuff. That's no longer two-state solution. It is putting the onus on Middle East partners like Egypt and Jordan and Saudi Arabia. If you don't like this idea, figure out what do you guys have. And I think that Netanyahu, with that framework, actually is extremely happy, especially after the maximum pressure executive order on Iran. I mean, he couldn't have come out of that meeting any happier, listening to him in the end game. I think that it was Donald Trump negotiating, you know, and putting things out there. Today he clarified it wouldn't include U.S. troops. You know, how you get from point A to point B is, you know, another question. But it does put the onus on the Middle East partners to say, what are we going to do?
It's interesting times. Brett, good luck Saturday. It'll be great. And I hope you never have to wear an Eagles jersey again, but you'll do anything for the company. You'll do anything for Fox. That's what I walk away with.
True. Loyal.
Go get him. Brett Baird, yeah. Thanks. Hey, your call's next. Mark Thiessen, bottom of the hour. President speaking again this morning. We'll tell you what he had to say.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. If you want something fun and easy to search for homes and apartments, then you should be using the Redfin app. Whether I'm searching for my next place, if I want to buy, if I want to rent, or if I just want to scroll through and see some dream homes, like, for example, something on the beach or at least a walk to the beach, a big house, second, maybe a third floor, I use the Redfin app. Redfin makes it fun to search all the homes for sale and apartments for rent in your neighborhood. You can filter for price, for beds, for baths, square footage, and so much more. So if you find a place you love, Redfin makes it easy to go see it in person. Just schedule a tour right from the app. Plus, if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents know how to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they close twice as many deals as other agents. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards your next home. So whether you're looking to buy, you're looking to rent, you're looking to sell, Redfin's got you covered. Download the Redfin app to get started.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Upgrade your business with Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. Shop Pay boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning fewer carts going abandoned and more sales going cha-ching. So if you're into growing your business, get a commerce platform that's ready to sell wherever your customers are. Visit Shopify.com to upgrade your selling today.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We are witnessing in real time the most corrupt bargain in American history. Elon Musk contributed, paid over $250 million to help elect Donald Trump. And now Donald Trump is turning over the keys to the Treasury and the rest of the federal government to Elon Musk. We need to end this illegal power grab, and we are going to do it now. We are not going back.
I can't tell you what an idiot Senator Van Hollen thinks we all are. He actually thinks that the goal of Elon Musk was to, I don't know, gut the government? Yes. Get it fiscally in order? Yes. For free. If this guy wanted to help himself, he would have made himself a cabinet secretary, been an influential person on the outside, put other people in powerful positions. But instead, he said, I'm going to bring beds I'm going to bring my people, pull them off their full-time jobs, maybe keep them their salary. That's up to him. And have them come in and use their expertise to try to lean out the American government, lean it out, expose the corruption, the maybe inadvertent and inadvertent fraud. To do that, you're going to have to turn over a few tables, and you're going to have to be able to get in there, and you got to go to human resources, and you got to go to U.S. Digital. Let me ask you something. Who do you think is better at digital services? Elon Musk, who owns Twitter, SpaceX, Tesla, and is able to put together systems to make these global companies work, to find a engine in Sacramento and find a sleek design in France? Or do you think it's U.S. data services? Of course it's the outside. Of course they're in there. And everyone in the federal government's got to prove their worth or they're going to be let go. What's severance? What's bad about that?
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
But for me, I didn't really saw that as like a super serious kind of a situation. And it's really just trying to shake things up and just announce like there is some truths about Gaza. How are somebody able to leave there right now when probably 85 to 90% or more of the buildings are destroyed or seriously damaged? So where are people going to live and how things are going to go? And how can you rebuild Gaza until Hamas is still allowed to endure?
Senator Fetterman is open to what you and I say. Now, him, Donald Trump, taking Gaza is not really with the way you would characterize Donald Trump's foreign policy, but is out of the box is, that's the headline. How, what does he do in that box? But what does he get people to do? So when they sit down in Qatar and they talk about phase two, and when Netanyahu says, or his representative says, there's no scenario where Hamas stays in power. And they said, we're Hamas, we're staying in power. There's none. And even the Americans know that you can't stay in power. Not saying I buy into give it to them, but can't do it. It's not livable. You massacred 1,100 people. You cause uproar around the world. You are single-handedly responsible for the decapitation of Hezbollah and the almost annihilation of the air defense on Iran. And that's what Trump did. He's changed everybody's the cadence of this conversation. Mark Thiessen knows all about strategy, former chief speechwriter for Bush, Fox News contributor, Washington Post columnist, a fellow at AEI. Mark, how do you think this is resonating, President Trump's idea of Gaza in American hands around the world?
Well, first of all, what I find stunning about it is, you know, everyone said, oh, Donald Trump's an isolationist. I don't know. I mean, he wants to take back the Panama Canal. He wants to buy Greenland. And now he's talking about taking a long-term ownership stake in Gaza and possibly sending U.S. troops to Gaza. That's not isolationist.
True.
So if you were a conservative isolationist, oh, and by the way, he's going to give weapons to Ukraine in exchange for rare earth minerals. I mean, none of this is isolationist. He wasn't isolationist in his first term, and he's not isolationist in the first 3 weeks of his second term. So I think people need to really reassess on the right what Donald Trump's foreign policy vision really is, because it's not isolationism.
So we know phase two that calls for right now the IDF to leave Gaza is not going to happen, yet we want the hostages out. So do you extend phase one? And can we stop writing or talking about a two-state solution? Don't tell me Joe Biden's like, we're for a two-state solution. That John Kerry, that we've always been. No, we're not. You could say it in a think tank, but when you get on the ground, nobody wants it. Not the Israelis, not Hamas. And nobody thinks there's anybody amongst the Palestinians who is a legitimate partner to negotiate with the Israelis.
None of the Palestinians want a two-state solution. They want all of it. And this is the problem, is that you cannot, what Netanyahu said in the press conference with Trump, is that you can't have peace with someone who wants to destroy you. And so, I mean, the process of what happens, I mean, what I like about what Trump is doing, I don't know if I like the idea of taking an ownership stake in Gaza or sending U.S. troops there. I'd like to hear more about what his plans are in concrete detail. But what I do like is at least he's the only one who's thinking about out of the box about some sort of vision for Gaza post this conflict, because the reality is Hamas has destroyed any chance of there being a Palestinian state. You cannot have it would be like trying to have a state with Germany where one half was controlled by Nazis. The Palestinians need, they need to go through a process of de-Nazification, de-Hamasification, because they supported all this. The people of Gaza elected Hamas. The majority of them supported the attacks on Israel. And the reason they don't like Hamas now is because of the blowback. They don't like the blowback that Hamas has invited into their country. But they hate Israel, and they don't want to live in peace with Israel. And you need to, the way we did it in World War II is we comprehensively defeated the Nazis, banned the Nazi Party, and forced the German people to confront their complicity with Nazi Germany's crimes. We had war crimes trials. We did end up working with some people from the Nazi government in different ways. So it wasn't a complete denazification. But Germany was forced to confront its past and ban all Nazi symbols, all the Nazi organizations. Everything was shut down. And unless you do that in Gaza, you can never have peace there, and you can never rebuild it.
I hear you. And the thing is, and we had the editor of the Jerusalem Post on yesterday. He wrote a column we know there's no two-state solution. Will the rest of the world finally understand it? There's no way going forward with it. So when President Trump yesterday also, was it yesterday or 2 days ago, also said with Iran, I'm into talks. You can't have a nuclear program. And they said they were into talking about it. The one thing Trump's leaving out is the financing of proxies. I would argue that's almost as lethal and disruptive as their nuclear program. Do you think that Iran going into talks with us benefits them or us?
Well, Trump's strategy is always it's a double-edged strategy. One is that he goes up to the top of the escalation ladder and dares you to follow him. But two, he offers you a path off the escalation ladder with negotiations. So when he killed Qasem Soleimani, he had drawn a red line with the Iranians and said, if you kill a single American or you or your proxies kill a single American, we won't hold the proxies responsible. We'll hold you responsible. And the Iranians didn't believe him, and they killed an American. And so he took out Qasem Soleimani, and then he told them, if you retaliate against us, I'm going to hit 52 targets in Iran in honor of the 52 hostages you took out in 1979. And he meant it. And they believed him. And they stopped. And so, you know, this is how he does it. He gives them a chance to choose the peaceful post, but he also takes the top of the escalation ladder. What he's doing now is he's reestablishing maximum pressure. Imposing sanctions. He says he's going to cut their oil production and oil sales to zero. That, by definition, will solve the proxy problem because they won't have any money to give to the proxies. They were cutting off Hamas and Hezbollah and all these people. There were New York Times stories about how Hezbollah fighters were complaining that they weren't getting paid because the Iranians said we have no money. So under Trump, and then Biden turned the spigot back on and gave them millions and millions and billions of dollars, you know, in exchange for releasing hostages and stuff. And they were able to fund Hamas again and Hezbollah, which led directly to October 7th. So you shut down the funding, and you squeeze them. And at the same time, you say you're going to give up your nuclear program or we're going to end it for you.
So I want to
– and give them the choice.
So for the thing that gets me so excited, it shows you where my life is now. What Doge is doing has got me elated because it's forensic accounting like I never thought anyone can do. You know, exposing all the bills and the payouts of the Treasury. Now, why people are going crazy, I don't understand. The Secretary of Treasury gave Elon Musk's group that permission, Scott Bessent. Here's what he said, cut 8.
What I will tell you, at the Treasury, our payment system is not being touched. We process 1.3 billion via payments a year. There's a study being done. Can we have more accountability, more accuracy, more traceability that the money is going where it is? But in terms of payments being stopped, that is happening upstream at the department level.
So understood. So now we're finding out that he's already saving $1 billion a day in finding the waste and fraud, and he's about to get Medicare and Medicaid. He says that's where the real success is going to come. This should be a good thing. Why isn't it looked at on the left like that?
Well, because they don't care about saving money. They think that it's going to cut things that they care about, like DEI operas in Colombia and other places like that. Look, here's what people need to understand. They're attacking Elon Musk Musk is a dictator. Nobody elected Elon Musk. What they need to understand, Elon Musk is a staffer. I know he's a billionaire and the richest man in the world, and he probably doesn't like to think of himself that way. He's a White House staffer. He's a very powerful White House staffer with the ear of the president. I mean, you know, that. But he's a staffer. And so his authority is authority that's been delegated to him by the president of the United States, who was elected by the American people with a promise to do this. And so when Elon Musk goes to AID or to the Treasury Department and says, I'd like to see your books, he's not doing it on his authority as Elon Musk, you know, Tesla founder and SpaceX, you know, and Mars explorer. He's doing it on the authority of the president of the United States who sent him there. So, and your job is to cooperate. And so there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, he's working with GSA. He's going to look in the IRS, too. And this is what he said. By the way, isn't it interesting that they kept telling us, Steve Bannon told Trump he's going to fire him, and everyone's saying these two are going to explode on each other. This is what Musk said on Trump on Sunday. The more I've gotten to know President Trump, the more I like him. Frankly, I love the guy. This is our shot. This is our best hand of cards we're ever going to have. I mean, please tell me where you see these two exploding. Every time he opened up on Sam Altman, and he said, yeah, they don't like each other. Trump didn't take it personal. You know, and the thing is, Elon went up to him and says, USAID is a den of vipers. And he said, you know, we got to get into some of these payments. And I could list some of them like your hair curl. And he said, Trump said, get rid of the whole thing. He's like, really? Get rid of the whole thing? Are you sure? He goes, yes. So they ultimately decide to fold it into the State Department. So they answer to Marco Rubio. Please tell me how that's a bad thing. We heard for the longest time the Secretary of State's got no control of the State Department. It's too big, too unwieldy. We don't know who these people are. He's finding out who they are.
Yeah. So, first of all, people who are setting their hair on fire about folding AID into the State Department, you know whose idea that was? This is a name from the past. Warren Christopher.
Wow.
Bill Clinton's Secretary of State came up with the idea. This is something that Warren Christopher proposed in 1995. I know this because I was working for Jesse Helms on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee at the time, and Al Gore killed it internally. And Jesse Helms turned around and said, "Well, though I like Warren Christopher's idea." He published an op-ed in the Washington Post called "Warren Christopher is Right," and he pushed to legislation to shut down three agencies: the Arms Control Disarmament Agency, USIA, which is the U.S. Information Agency, all the Freedom Radios, and AID. And they fought over it for it had a standoff, and eventually they agreed to shut down two of them and put the third one under the direct authority of the Secretary of State, which was AID. The AID is the only one that survived, but it reports to the Secretary of State. And so the Secretary of State can say, you know what, I'm the director of AID, and all the functions are moving here into the State Department if he wants to. He's got all the legal authority. And you know who co-sponsored the bill?
Mm-hmm.
Joe Biden. It was the Helms-Biden bill.
Wow. Are you going to put that in a column, or did you put that in a column?
I got a column coming out today, later today.
Is this what it's in there? Is this the subject?
It's all in there. This was the authority that Marco Rubio is using to bring AID into the State Department is under the Helms-Biden bill. And it's the idea was Warren Christopher's.
Unbelievable. I did not know that, but fascinating. So people should understand that. What I would do is what Elon Musk did with the Twitter files. He talked Schellenberger, Matt Taibbi, Barry Weiss, and he said, guys, come check this out. I would bring in the Wall Street Journal, you know, Washington Post, whatever you want, and just say, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm seeing. This is what's going on. You know, and I want you to know my approach. I want you to see my guys and my women, by the way, Office of Personnel Management, he brought in there too. And I want you to see what we're doing. And I want to see what's exposed. And you could choose to write the fraud and abuse that you're witnessing in the farcical programs in which we're financing, but I want you to witness it because there's no secrets going on here. No one has a secret agenda. We have to cut $2 trillion out of the budget.
And look, there are good things that AID does, like PEPFAR, fighting AIDS in Africa and fighting malaria in Africa and all the rest of that. All that can be done from the State Department. But the problem is that the bureaucrats at USAID don't like the U.S. in USAID. They just want to be AID. They call themselves AID, by the way. They don't call themselves USAID. And the reason for that is because they consider themselves to be independent do-gooders who go out and do projects that they approve of and they think are good for the country and all the rest of it. No, these are taxpayer dollars. And it's supposed to be connected. The reason why we put Helms and Biden put the Secretary of State in charge of AID is because it's supposed to pursue U.S. foreign policy interests and the policies of the administration and support that. Mm-hmm. Go out and help countries who are helping us. Go out and support, it should be following U.S. foreign policy. It's a tool of U.S. foreign policy. If you want to just do good around the world, go work for the Gates Foundation. They'll give you billions of dollars to spread around the world and do your trans operas and whatever the hell you want to do with that. But you don't use U.S. taxpayer dollars for that. So it should be in the State Department, where the political appointees set by Donald Trump to run U.S. foreign policy can approve or disapprove which programs get funded and what gets done.
If you want to know,
as simple as that.
Last subject real quick. I'm already over. But we have Speaker Johnson convinced Congressman Norman to get along. He was a holdout to some type of monster bill to come out of the House. Let's see if they can do it, find out what's in it. But the Senate's getting tired of waiting. They're going two bills, and Senator Thune's moving forward. Today, to the president's great credit, they're meeting at the White House again, both sides. Can you help me at all with what's going on, being that you're in Washington, about where this is going?
There should be two bills. You've got this opportunity to pass what there should be a small bill and then a large bill. We're going to have a major tax overhaul down the line. It's going to take months to negotiate. It's going to be complicated. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to be hard. I think they'll get it done. But do something simple and quick right now. Eliminate taxes on tips and pay for it by taxing the endowments of Harvard, Columbia, and MIT. That's it. And pass it. You can pass that next week. And let Harvard pay for a tax cut for working class Americans, and then Trump can sign a bill, for delivering on his campaign promises for all the millions of people who he brought into the Republican Party. Do that right away, and then leave the rest of it for later.
And you could tell me back off, but if you keep coming up with ideas like this and writing columns like you have, you're going to end up in the White House with a massive pay cut, and your kids aren't going to be able to go to college.
Right. I've got four kids going to college, buddy. I'm not going into government anytime soon.
Mark, always great. Thanks so much. Back in a moment.
Take care.
It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The Trump administration removed transgender references from federal government websites. It now reads LGB. Instead of LGBT.
They have no idea the damage T was doing to our nation. Consonants! Because I think you'll agree with me, there is no T in USA. If you spell it out, obviously that becomes an issue. And if you want a BLT for lunch, things can get ugly. But nothing will stop America's low T, like no T. What other changes are making us great again?
The Trump administration ordering all gender ideology references be removed, including pronouns and email signatures.
Oh, yeah. Consonants and pronouns! Your next prepositions. No more pronouns and email signatures. Good luck signing your emails now, President She. Or should I say President Him?
So funny, right? I mean, the fact that Eric's going to go back to Monday's Daily Show to get humor is sad, because I watched, you know what I did this morning? I watched Jimmy Fallon's monologue to see if I can get something. Nothing. I shouldn't probably nod my head. I should actually say it out loud.
That helps for radio,
right.
Yeah.
Good. Nothing. You know, I thought, I'm like, oh, I'm going to show you. Got nothing.
No, it's a really quick thing. If it gets, during Hegseth's hearings, Senator Sheehy asked him, like, how many genders are there? Like, two. And he's like, thank you. And he made some, like, really corny joke about his last name.
That's
we'll
good.
Try to find it.
That is pretty funny. Maybe we'll do that. And I'll act like I never heard it before. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right. From 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, streamed on Fox Nation. As well as our own stream on Fox News, you just click on watch and you'll be able to see it. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. This hour, we're going to be joined by Rod Woodson, Pro Football Hall of Famer, fantastic Pittsburgh Steeler for years. And also, he went over to the Baltimore Ravens where he won a Super Bowl championship. He's going to be joining us too. Talk about New Orleans and what's it like. It's being transformed into a Super Bowl city. Find out today if Eli Manning gets into the Hall of Fame. It would be just. Be kind of cool, because grew up in Louisiana. His dad starred Well, his dad didn't start. He started Mississippi at Ole Miss. But, of course, the family is synonymous with the Saints, where his dad starred for the New Orleans Saints for years, and he grew up basically in the press box and on the sideline. So we'll be able to talk to that that story. But first, here are the big three stories right now.
Number three.
But the actual idea of allowing first Gazans who want to leave, I mean, what's wrong with that? This is the first good idea that I've heard. It's a remarkable idea.
That is Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister. Trump offers a plan for Gaza, and the world flips out. I'm intrigued and see how the long game, at least one Democrat agrees, there needs to be some disruption in the process.
Number two.
The president, who's made the offer today, then we'll be working on the details of all of this, but the offer to increase these flights, these deportations by 40%. It's very important for us in terms of the migratory situation that we're facing.
That is Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Border crackdown, flat out spectacular success thus far. Numbers don't lie as other nations step up and help out.
Number one.
What Elon Musk is doing is illegal. It is a coup.
We're not going to have apartheid in America anymore.
Unbelievable. What are they talking about? Apartheid because he's from South Africa? You idiot. Doge driving Dems crazy, but they should be celebrating. I know I am. The most impactful agency in my lifetime. Can a balanced budget be possible next if the revenues continue to soar? Senator Roger Wicker joins us now, chairman of Armed Services. Senator, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, thanks for having me on, and thanks for being a strong voice for making our defense so strong that we stay out of a war.
Absolutely. So I want to talk about that, but if I can just get your perspective, you don't overreact to anything. You don't get involved in the histrionics. And I'm watching these Democrats lose their mind over cost-cutting. They're looking at the Treasury to find out who's spending what. They're looking to find out what's happening with things like USA Aid. And they're looking to find out what's happening with the government GSA. Why are people upset?
Well, and when we find out, we hear about some outrageous spending. I mean, which taxpayer in America wants us to pay for a transgender opera in Islamic countries? That's absolutely insane. Nobody can defend that. And so to the extent that Elon Musk and his team are exposing this, I am absolutely grateful and horrified that money's been going there, but glad we're learning about it.
So you got Cory Booker, Senator Ed Markey, Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs. Listen to this. Cut three.
What Elon Musk is doing is illegal. It is a coup.
Elon Musk makes unsafe cars, and now he wants to create an unsafe world. We will not shut up. We will stand up. We will speak up. That same spirit that Elon Musk has coming from South Africa. We're not going to have apartheid in America anymore.
I mean, what do you say to that?
Well, first of all, if it's illegal, a court will step in and say it's illegal. I've just been now 4 days, and I haven't seen that. So, you know, let the courts decide that if indeed it's illegal. Look, Brian, we need a foreign aid program that assists America in combating China's Belt and Road Initiative. China's out to buy influence all over Africa and South America and the developing world. But for heaven's sake, it needs to be spent smartly on infrastructure and things like that that make us friends. And so it's amazing, the histrionics. I guess it's expected, but I'm glad that we've got a new administration that is being disruptive in the good sense of the word. They're going in and finding out where the bodies are buried and where the waste is, and I think most Americans are glad to see it and glad to see us off to the races in the first 2 or 3 weeks.
So I see that Sean Duffy at Transportation reached out to the Musk's group and said, would you help us upgrade our U.S. aviation system? Musk said, of course. They're talking right now. They're going to go in there with some of the systems that helped Tesla, the Boeing, the SpaceX. Obviously now they put chips in brains. They were able to get parts around the world what they know about supply chains, what they know about what they've learned from X. This is a lethal group that knows how to cost cut. Why would we not help out?
And frankly, Brian, that's part of one of my white papers on defense. We need to be using and embracing the type of American innovation that we're seeing in the private sector, which is exactly what you're talking about. Who could argue against using some of the same procedures and same tactics that the most successful people in the world are using?
So you put out this, you were kind enough to give it to me, Restoring Freedoms Forged, America's Innovation Unleashed. And this was written, I think, before that Secretary Hegseth wrote it. Came aboard as Secretary of Defense.
Okay.
So you got he didn't write it.
I wrote it, but I can tell you, Secretary Hegseth likes it and is headed in exactly the same way. We're going to use this this technique called budget reconciliation. It's a big term, but basically what it means is we can use this type of parliamentary tactic to pass savings, real savings, in all areas of the budget that we can use to strengthen the border, to give the president as much as $150 billion on his border program, and also to beef up national defense. And we're going to find savings for every dollar of that in other parts of the federal government. So that is my main goal. And I think it's Secretary Hegseth and the president's main goal in working with the House and working with the Senate. Do we do one bill? Do we have to split it up because of time constraints into two bills? Those are things we're working on. But I can tell you the Speaker of the House and the leadership in the Senate are committed to working with Donald Trump to build up the border, to make sure that that campaign promise is kept, and to make America so strong that Russia and China stand down and realize it would be fruitless to take a stab at us.
Absolutely. First off, would you allow Elon Musk to get into the Pentagon budget?
Well, absolutely. I think there are probably some – I don't know what Elon Musk's security clearance is, but I imagine it's pretty high. But absolutely, I would think that someone looking at that someone from outside – who's made a success of many enterprises and headed in new directions is going to be very, very helpful.
So you'd be there.
I think the American people embrace this, and they're glad to see somebody taking a different look and not being so traditional.
I think Americans are. I think the Democrats aren't, and I don't get why, because you guys at the Pentagon have not passed an audit. They just threw up their hands. So that's got to change. How can you do that?
And we're going to have an audit, Brian. We're going to have an audit, and we're going to pass that audit. That's one of the goals of this administration. If after 3 or 4 years we haven't absolutely had a success in that regard, I will be very, very disappointed. There's no reason why we can't do it.
Well, why does it stop? Why hasn't it happened before? Even when they try, like, what stands in the way? Is it just so big you can't get the departments to report to one? What's going on?
Don't ask me to make excuses for previous administrations.
Okay.
It is a giant operation. Of course, in the discretionary budget, all the appropriation bills, the other ones are 50%, and national defense is 50% of all the money that we appropriate. So it is gigantic. But what I'm saying is we're determined to get to the bottom of it, and I think the president has congressional support because of this trifecta that we had in November. We've got the leadership of the House and Senate and the executive branch, and so if we can't do it this time, shame on us. And I'm saying this to the public right now. I'm saying that the U.S. Senate and the Armed Services Committee is determined to get this done, although it's been a sticky wicket for the government for a long time.
All right, so let's talk about
taxpayer dollars.
What do you want percentage of the GDP in defense? What are you going to ask for in this budget?
Well, we eventually need to get to 5% of the gross domestic product. And the good part about that is President Trump endorsed this just the other day. And he said, and by the way, all of the NATO nations need to do this. And honestly, you know, Brian, you and I have been voices crying in the wilderness about our NATO friends stepping forward. The fact is, in the last couple of years, they have stepped forward.
I know.
And most of them have gotten to 2%. And it's a worthy cause, because if Russia loses their effort to take over a neighboring country, then Russia is weakened in their partnership with China. And China and Russia are in it together against us like they've never been before. And their allies, North Korea, and their other allies, is Iran, running around the Middle East with all these proxies like Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis. And we've got a team of aggressors that are after us. And I'm glad we have an administration that is awake to this threat. And we're going to make amends in our budget, and we're going to pay for it by savings elsewhere.
I hear there's just not enough defense companies, contractors, to even get them competitive, to go against each other, to have competitive bids for projects. How do you plan on re-expanding the number of companies? How do you you can't demand that, can you?
Well, they will respond to economic incentives, and frankly, we've been shortchanging the Defense Department. And every time our Republican appropriators have wanted to raise defense spending in the spending bills, it requires 60 votes in the Senate to get over the filibuster rule, and I do support the filibuster. But every time we suggest that, our Democrat friends say you got to increase domestic spending by an equal amount. And we're determined to break that, but the main way we do it is this budget reconciliation, where mm-hmm. we don't have to have 60 votes. But there's a new sheriff in town. There are new majorities in the House and Senate and the administration, mm-hmm. and it's our turn to make this country strong and get where we need to be. And so part of the defense industrial base is telling them, yes, we want you to build these weapon systems, and here's the money. And if that's the case, we'll hire the people, and frankly, we're going to have to pay them some more. There's no reason for us to be paying a welder the same amount of money that somebody is making at a McDonald's right outside the gate of the shipyard. That's not going to get it. And so we're going to have to compensate these people that work in the shipyards and build our state-of-the-art jets and munitions and radars. We're going to have to pay them adequately, and we haven't been doing that.
And, Senator, you know, it could all help. I just think that when we realize we have dozens of allies with money around the world that they're respectful of our weapon systems, and they should be, they'll pay money to do it. They will sign contracts that allow people to sign other workers to contracts. And then we could start not giving us the upper end, but giving a solid base to our allies to defend themselves and stop a would-be invasion or a cyber attack, because they would be able to do something without America being there every step of the way. They could be our friends and family's discount. That would foster the expansion of the military industrial base, because we're a capitalist country. It only stands to reason.
And we have to lead, and we have to lead just like we did under the 12 years of Reagan and H.W. Bush. We had 12 years where we got to 5% of our economy being spent on national defense. It created a ton of jobs, but the main thing it did, it kept us out of war for a decade. And that's the sort of legacy that Donald Trump can leave. If this favorable moment in our government, if we'll pull together and give him the tools.
And so far you think that Pete's getting it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He is. And we're in close contact. And honestly, to tell you the truth, he's putting together a team that that actually takes away some of our great staff talent from the Republican side of the Senate. So we're working together, and he understands. And frankly, he works for a guy that can finish his second four-year term in the same way that Ronald Reagan did.
Be great.
And I think we have every chance to do that.
Yeah, and I just hope you have enough Democrats on your committee that feel like you do, that we have to increase our defense spending responsibly. You combine that with a comprehensive audit, it could be a real boon for us. Senator Roger Wicker, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
You should publish this Restoring Freedom's Forge. Is that available anywhere?
Oh, absolutely. It's not been published by a publishing company, but it's out there. You can get it on the internet. But
good.
We'll check with your studio and see if we can get it more widely distributed.
Yeah, a lot of my listeners would love to see what your vision is, and we're getting a sense of that. Thanks so much, Senator.
Thank you, sir.
Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
But you can gaslight us all you want, because the one thing you didn't count on is our secret weapon.
The roots of democracy are deep. People are aroused. I haven't seen people so aroused in a very, very long time in terms of going, trying to get this done.
Aroused.
Yeah. And they looked into the camera and did a single shot and says, you have to stop putting him out there. And I agree. I mean, he's got experience and he's a good, like, behind-the-scenes fighter like Mitch McConnell is. But he doesn't stand for anything. He's not inspirational, and he's not comfortable. He just stares down at his sheets when he's on Congress as if no one's ever given it to him before, as if it's another language he's interested in trying to in real-time translating. Or he's just inauthentically trying to inspire people. So he is like leading this charge at 76 years old as a New York Democrat who ignores anti-Semitism as a Jewish American. So you lost all credibility with me. I see really no one outside Fetterman who is of interest on the left.
Breaking news. Unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I just want to be remembered as one of the greatest teams of all time at the end of the day. And I know how blessed I am to be in Kansas City and the people that I have around me, coaches and players. And so I'm more focused on leaving the imprint on the Kansas City Chiefs and how we are remembered for the rest of time.
So that's not too bad. Patrick Mahomes talks a mile a minute. I would know that. And talking about three in a row, the guy doesn't seem to sweat anything. After a year of watching Alex Smith, he stepped on the field and was instantly transformed the Chiefs to good to great. And we've been witnessing that since. A guy that knows all about good and great, and he was great. He was a Hall of Fame cornerback. Rod Woodson joins us now. Holds the NFL record for fumble recovers, defensive player, an interception return for a touchdown, 12 of them. And he was also named NFL Defensive Player of the Year. He played for the Steelers, Niners, Ravens, and Raiders. Rod, welcome to Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
So, Rod, are you in New Orleans?
I'm in New Orleans, driving over to the convention center right now.
How's it feel? Does it feel like a Super Bowl week?
Well, not for me, because I'm not playing. So, I mean, but for the players, it does. You know, I was with Jaden Hicks last night, who's from Las Vegas, went to Bishop Gorman in Washington State, and I know he's really excited, right? He feels it. He feels the excitement. He feels the anticipation of the opening kickoff, and, you know, the families are coming in, and tomorrow, you know, and having that media request every single day is one of the main things that made him realize this is a really big game, because there's people from all over the world here asking questions.
And it's more of a global game than ever. You know, I was just talking to a bar owner last night right here in New York City. He says, I have a bar in Dublin. And he said, I cannot believe the reservations we have for the Super Bowl already. And it just grows every single year. In fact, it's got two bars there. And I said, I'm amazed. Do they understand the game, or they just know this event? He goes, no, they get the game. And also, we're finding when you guys go to London, I mean, they have the favorite teams now.
Yeah, you know, the American football is played almost in every country in on the globe. And, you know, obviously they understand it more and more and more the more they're watching it. But also it's being played by the youth, especially at the flag level. So they're learning. They're going to be tracking it. They're going to be following it. And hopefully in a couple years or in 10 years, maybe not in my lifetime, but, you know, we'll see more more different countries, players representing their countries playing in the National Football League consistently. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the growth. I know the league is more about viewership and all that stuff, but me personally, you know, I like to see the game being grown all over the world, and the coaches who are coaching it, the kids who are playing it, they're having fun.
So the moment you're Super Bowl champ, you guys beat the Giants in Tampa, I believe it was. Art Modell, the owner, Brian Billick, the coach. Here's how it sounded. Cut 38 after.
To the people in Baltimore City, to the people in Baltimore County, and to the state of Maryland, this belongs to you.
I've been at this profession a while, but these guys here taught me this year for the first time in 25 years in the business about what really teamwork is. And it's because of these guys right here.
Well, your team had a certain swagger all week. We could see it here. And on the field today, again, you just shut down the Giants, forced 5 turnovers. Tell me, does this validate your defense maybe as the best in the history of the National Football League?
I'm biased, but who cares? Someone tell me they're not. I'll argue it to the death.
What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I tell you what. I think it is arguably the best single-season defense in NFL history. We shattered the scoring record for the 84-85 Bears defense, points allowed. You couldn't run against us. It was tough to throw against us. Only thing that I'm a little disappointed with, I wish that they would have brought Trent Dilfer back the second year around and we would have had our same group to try to repeat. We didn't get that opportunity. We made the postseason, but we didn't get everybody. So defensively, yes, I think that one given year, we are one of the best defenses, if not the best defense ever to play in the National Football League.
Yeah, I was at that game. That was before 9/11, so you were able to – the security wasn't nearly as great. But the interest was great, being the Giants. Did you know going into that game, did you just – I know you wanted to win, but did you know you were going to win? Did you see the Giants on film and know you were the better team?
Oh, yeah. I remember after they won, because they, you know, they beat Minnesota, which was a really good football team. They had a great offense that year. And I remember me and Ray Lewis sitting down on Monday watching film, and we cut it off after a quarter, said, man, if they get past the 50, we're going to quit.
I'm a Giant fan. That hurts.
I mean, we just had belief because we knew they were going to try to run the football.
And Joe, you had Siragusa up front too, who is a run stopper with a great personality. Also, how many years were you coming from Cleveland? Modell brought the team to Baltimore before you got that Super Bowl championship.
Okay, let's go ahead. Go ahead in there.
Yep.
No, go ahead. Say it again, sir.
Rod, how many years were you out of Cleveland? Were they out of Cleveland before they won it in Baltimore?
Oh, heck. So they got there in 96, I believe. I think that's when Ray Lewis and Jonathan Ogden was drafted. So that would be 4 years?
4 years later. So Rod, you're fighting against one of the big stories in America. We lose about 70,000 people to fentanyl. You have a message, and it's one pill can kill.
Yeah, one pill can kill. You think about, it's personal for me because my oldest son was had an addiction when he was younger, and you think about the poisonings and overdoses is a leading killer for Americans from the age 18 to 45 years old. And when you start thinking about fentanyl, this is three little, about the size of a salt grains, can kill you. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing is, but the one conversation that you can have with them, it can save a life. And that's the biggest thing. We just want to put the message out there to these young kids and people who are taking these type of drugs that you can't get prescription drugs on social media, right? And that's one of the main things that people are dying. And there thinking everything is fine, and it's not. So we just want people to be very cautious, being very careful about what they do and what they put in their bodies. And if they have an issue, and if you see friends who have an issue, say something to them. Talk to them about it. And hopefully that can save their lives.
Gotcha. What's your prediction on this game?
I tell you what, if they can't stop Mr. Barkley, I think Hurts is going to be healthier because he was banged up the week of the championship game, so he wasn't as mobile. And I think, you know, the defensive front, I think that's the strength of the Eagles. Their defense in general is so fast, so physical. You know, obviously they're going to have to slow down Travis Kelce, but if they can't stop Mr. Barkley and that defensive front can get after Patrick Mahomes by playing soft coverages on the backside of that, I like Philly. But then Patrick Mahomes always makes one or two plays every single game, every single year. They keep making them win Super Bowls. But I like Philly.
Yeah. All right. We'll see what happens. We know they got a lot of talent, got a great line. And I've watched Barkley since he was drafted with the Giants, and I always wondered what he could do with a line like that. Now we know. First off, before I let you go, do you remember this? Cut 39.
This is Bruce Smith's you, man. Wait a minute. This is Rod Woodson's shoe. I have visions of Rod Woodson. I see him lurking like a shadow. I sense he's somewhere lurking. I hear his heartbeat. Ba-boom. 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 Rod?
That's Dennis Hopper. Your thoughts. Yeah. 1995 Nike commercial.
Yeah, I tell you what. Look, I'm honored to be remembered. I remember Dick LeBeau always saying, I'd rather be a has-been than a never was. And I'm just honored that I got to play 17 years in the National Football League. I had some great coaches, some great teammates to be around me. And I got to grow in the game. I got to see the game grow over these years. And it's been great to be a part of it and great to still be in some form or fashion calling games and talking to players and being around the sports that I love.
Rod, have you found anything as rewarding as playing?
No. I think the biggest thing more than playing, I think it's the time you spend in the locker room with the players, right, with your boys, with your guys, and you get to meet their families and you grow up together. I think that I miss that more than playing, because that camaraderie you get in the locker room where my kids grew up with Carnell Lake's kids, with Greg Lloyd kids, you know, with Harding Nickerson kids. I mean, that's something that's life lasting, and we still talk about that. My kids still talk to their kids.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, Liz, Tony Siragusa is a good friend of the show. Your remembrance of Tony?
Goose. I mean, I'll tell you what, Goose was the funniest, biggest. I mean, he was the life of the party. He's the one person that could talk about the owner, the head coach, the general manager, and never get in trouble. I mean, he would crack jokes about him and never, ever get in trouble. So miss him to death, man. Just a guy that was larger than life. And anytime you're around him, you always smile.
Absolutely. Success in every way. Just a great, treated everybody great. You know, he always didn't care if you were Rod Woodson or if you were a Hall of Famer or a fan. He always had interest in you. It was an amazing quality he had.
Absolutely.
Hey, Rod,
absolutely.
I look forward to seeing you out there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Okay, my pleasure. I appreciate it. Thanks
and,
a lot.
And his message, you know, we talk about it all the time, fentanyl. It's one of the things, the president's going to put tariffs on two countries because of fentanyl. He's promoting something that's so important that one pill can kill. Try it at your own risk. You don't have to be an addict. You do it one time. You feel a little tired for a test. You go online, you order some Ritalin or ADD medication. Boom. It's sprinkled in there and it's over. And that will be the sad legacy. Your family will never be the same. All right, Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, I'll open up the phones. I did get some emails. Here's what John writes me. He says this about USA. USA, I think Musk team need to pull a random sample of 500 USAID projects approved for the last 5 years to include low, medium, and high-dollar commitments. Identify how many were rejected and approved, who submitted them and who approved them by name. That would at least provide a window into the level of discipline applied to the taxpayer collections. I have news for you. Almost everything got approved that was applied. And it is possible to get a name. That's a great suggestion, John. Thanks so much. More of those when we come back.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The most basic of questions. Why do you want to be president of the United States?
There are many reasons, but probably first and foremost, I truly believe in the promise of America. I do. And I love the American people. You know, we are a people who have ambition and aspirations and dreams and optimism and hope.
That's why you want to run. That's why you want to be president.
That's why I'm
president.
Running. And some other reasons.
But you're asking the American people to make you the most powerful person on the planet. Mm-hmm. Why do you deserve the American people's votes?
Well, first of all, I have a career and a history of being very clear that I think of my role of leadership, and in particular now for the last 4 years as vice president and moving forward as president, if the voters will have me, as being a leader on behalf of all Americans.
Oh, my goodness. How terrible is that? That is the raw video of Kamala Harris's interview with 60 Minutes. You see him re-ask. Because when you're in the field, you can re-ask a question to get a crisper answer. He gave her one question, terrible. Second, he goes, let me try it again in a different way. And that's what you have. A bunch of series of thoughts, not one that she mean.
And nothing substantial. I want to change the country. This and that's just all it word salad up the wazoo.
You think Trump would answer like that?
Absolutely not.
We're failing. I'm going to fix it. We have dumb trade deals. We're getting in dumb wars. I got to revamp the military. We got to get our economy going. We're spending too much. The greening of the economy is going south. We have to be smart about the resources that we have. I don't think we're doing that now. And I'm tired of watching from afar. Here is Michael Schellenberger, who listened to this and had this reaction. Cut 37.
I mean, it's like the easiest stuff to memorize. You would think she would have memorized it by then, but it feels like she's trying to figure out why she's running for president every time she's asked. I mean,
it's like a month before the election and you're on 60 Minutes.
She's like,
why do you want to be president?
Why am I
running?
Like,
so it's just terrible.
I mean, she was asked that on The View, remember? She had no answer there, too. Like, at what point did her advisors, well, they clearly never did, sit her down and be like, this is how you should answer that question with some sort of substance?
It's incredible. So this is, I'm going to just give you another side of this. So Brendan Carr is the new FCC chair. So Brendan Carr was just on with me, and he was on Fox and Friends. And he said it was important for us to get these transcripts out because they were hiding them. They didn't want to come forward with it, and they were being sued for $10 billion. So I said, you know, what do you think about this being a precedent? Now, all of a sudden, everybody wants to wear a raw interview. For example, you and I were just in Austin, Texas. We interviewed four or five professors and kids, students, about the University of Austin, Texas. Some people might be like, I look stupid. You know, that's not what I meant to say. They edited me and they lied about it. And where I just have to take a piece down where I shot 45 minutes to make a 7-minute piece. So that's going to be their argument.
It's true. And I mean, also, if you look at the why you want to be president, I mean, that was this over 70-second cut. And you know, 60 Minutes only has so much time and it's just a non-answer.
But what I would have done is if I was telling the story and who should be the next president, Kamala Harris, when asked why she wanted this job to begin with, anything but crisp. Well, or here's her...
But also these
dubious explanation.
The thing with 60 Minutes is they usually put on a bunch of 60 Minutes overtime. They usually give you all the extra footage online, and they didn't this time, which was part of the issue.
You know what's interesting, too? Ted Kennedy was asked this in the 80s, 1979, 80, about why you want to be president. He had such a bad answer that he failed. Like, he couldn't, he was never able to marshal the run to be president. What happened in 76? And his answer was so bad, they didn't let him run. And then he goes to 1980, was never able to get it again. So he had no answer. Ted Kennedy had no answer.
So there's history as even more reason why she should have had a good answer.
You know, it's interesting, Eric, if we could ever pull that up to show you how devastating it is. But, I mean, there's no doubt about it, there's bias. Remember Leslie Stahl was a great guest for us, was asked, Trump said, you know, the laptop was real. They hid information. The Russians, all the, he goes, this is 60 Minutes. You can't say things like that. The laptop is, they admitted it's wrong. Leslie, he didn't admit it's wrong. So you can't put reality to someone who has no interest in reality. That's the key. Like, you can't make someone understand what's really going on or be open enough to understand they don't know everything.
It's really disappointing how the institution of 60 Minutes has fallen so far.
Right. Very good summation. See? I didn't ask you to sum up how you feel. You did it on your own.
I am that good.
You could be president.
I should be president.
We did it, Joe.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, welcome to the latest minutes of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're finishing out a really fast week. My goodness. President of the United States has already spoken today at the National Prayer Breakfast. Two speeches before 9:30. And, of course, front and center is Majority Leader John Thune and Speaker Johnson. They're in a little bit of a rush, so to speak, because one is trying to get a bill out of their chamber. If you ask Senator Thune, it's going to be two separate bills. If you ask Speaker Johnson, I need one big bill. But the problem Speaker Johnson has is he's got an unwieldy majority, and they are very uneven. But good news, they got Ralph Norman, the congressman, to go along with the majority. For now, that leaves usually Chip Roy and maybe Thomas Massie as the only two holdouts. This hour, we're going to be joined by Josh Krasauer and Sean Alexander, the NFL MVP from 2005, longtime Seahawk. He's going to be breaking down what's happening in New Orleans at the Super Bowl 59. First, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
But the actual idea of allowing first Gazans who want to leave to leave. I mean, what's wrong with that? This is the first good idea that I've heard. It's a remarkable idea.
And that is the prime minister here in America. He's going to the Capitol today talking about what's happening with Donald Trump's idea with Gaza. Trump offers a plan. The world flips out. I'm intrigued.
Number two.
The president who's made the offer today, then we'll be working on the details of all this, but the offer to increase these flights, these deportations by 40%. It's very important for us in terms of the migratory situation that we're facing.
That is Marco Rubio. The border crackdown, flat out spectacular success. Numbers don't lie as other nations step up and help. And we ship some of the criminals to Gitmo already.
Number one.
What Elon Musk is doing is illegal. It is a coup.
We're not going to have apartheid in America anymore.
That's an angry guy who's actually unhinged, and he's a Democratic congressman. Doge driving Dems crazy, but they should be celebrating. I know I am. The most impactful agency in my lifetime so far. Can a balanced budget be possible in a country that's running over a trillion-dollar deficit? Joining us now is Josh Krasauer, Fox News Radio political analyst, editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. Josh, your reaction to the unhinged response to Elon Musk's crew?
Well, look, Democrats just clearly don't have their political act together. There are ways to go after Elon Musk. You know, if you look at some of his favorability numbers, they've taken a dip since he's joined the administration. But you literally have the most radical left-wing lawmakers going in front of like a government aid, the Department of Labor, USAID, Elizabeth Warren, Ilhan Omar, literally the kind of the most hated Democratic politicians in the country, and they're the face of this. It is just look, federal bureaucrats not the most sympathetic people in terms of public opinion either. And, you know, there are ways if Musk, I think, is biting off a little bit more than he can chew, and there may be some legal issues and that are going to come up down the road. But look, Democrats don't seem to have a playbook on how to actually be part of the loyal opposition. And they're actually making themselves out to be just as crazy and unhinged and haven't figured out a way to appeal to the people who have mixed opinions, who are going to be key to winning elections down the road.
Well, pretty amazing that we're witnessing this. Mike LaRosa feels like you did. He's a former special assistant to President Biden and chief of staff to Jill Biden. Cut five.
We don't have power. This is not the hill we want to die on, right? The country does not really like foreign aid. I learned this from watching The West Wing in the 90s. It is not a popular subject with Main Street America, nor our federal workers. We don't want to be caught on our heels defending spending on DEI in Serbia, which is right. What is going to happen to a lot right. of these members if they don't move on and start focusing on things that matter, play the long game, and stop being distracted by these shiny objects.
That is true. They're shiny objects, but it's significant. But for you go into the Treasury, all right, people go, oh, what are you doing? Well, we just want to find out where the bills are. It's a look-only situation. And then he also went to GSA. He's looking to find out what's happening there. He told 2.3 million federal workers, we got to gut the force. You have a six-month payout and 2 weeks to decide. Even at the CIA, they're gutting personnel. Josh, I hate to tell you, you know this, in our business, that happens all the time. Sometimes good people got to go somewhere else because the budget's too high. You're getting paid too much. We didn't have a great year. The country is over budget. What's the resentment coming from?
Well, look, the politics, going after USAID and Michael LaRosa, I think, is absolutely right that, like, foreign aid, a lot of the wasteful money that we've seen in the last few days about foreign aid and these projects that have been, and frankly, there's a lot of like left-wing activists that are employed as part of that agency. And so it's an easy target. And I think it's a big political win in that sense for Trump. I'm a little more mixed about the CIA and there's also been a lot of personnel changes at the FBI that people who worked on some of the January 6th investigations, who have been involved in counterterrorism investigations, but it got tied up by chance and other things, have been reassigned or fired. Those are, I think, bigger political targets for Democrats. And the fact that they're showing up at USAID and the Department of Labor and shouting and screaming and not focusing, I think, on a more, you know, national security is an issue, I think, that concerns Republicans and Democrats. And it's one thing to cut, you know, waste and fraud and abuse and making sure you make budgets. It's another thing, like, in terms of reallocating good people who are actually fighting terrorism and putting them in other roles or changing budgets around that may in a way that may hamper national security. Democrats have a target, but they're so kind of in their left wing bubble that they don't even see the opportunities ahead of them. So the fact that they're kind of, you know, crying over USAID and some of the, you know, activism that's taking place in that agency, as opposed to some of the national security agencies, FBI, CIA in particular, it shows you that they're just not politically ready for this moment.
It's strange, but it's crazy. I mean, there's a lot of screaming going on. Cut three.
What Elon Musk is doing is illegal. It is a coup.
Elon Musk makes unsafe cars, and now he wants to create an unsafe world. We will not shut up. We will stand up. We will speak up. That same spirit that Elon Musk has coming from South Africa. We're not going to have apartheid in America anymore.
That's Cory Booker and Jonathan Jackson. Jonathan Jackson says because he's from South Africa, he's a racist. I mean, what are you talking about? I mean, this guy's putting rockets in air for the last 15, 20 years. If he had a problem with the South African, who's a naturalized citizen, he missed his window.
Well, and Brian, they put front and center, the Democrats did at these events, the most left-wing members of Congress that you can possibly imagine. Jesse Jackson's son, Jonathan Jackson, Elizabeth Warren, Jamie Raskin. That is not how you play effective politics, by taking your most unhinged, taking the most unhinged rhetoric and the most unlike, dislike progressives, activists in your caucus and putting them on in front of the cameras. I mean, there are better spokespeople that the Democrats have that either, I think some of them actually understand that, like, cutting the waste in some of these agencies is actually popular, that there is not a backlash to trying to trim the federal workforce. But I think there are areas that, like we've been talking about, that they can go on offense, but they just don't. They're so stuck in their ideological bubbles that they don't see even the political opportunities.
So this is the crazy thing. So this USAID, I didn't know a lot about it. I wasn't even sure that they were separate from the State Department. You probably knew that right away. I thought they were part of the humanitarian arm, but they're not. And I think one of the quotes that got my attention was Elon Musk said, I'm looking at this and there's a den of vipers. And he had to meet over the weekend with Trump. He's like, this is really bad. And he's like, get rid of it. And then they decide they're going to fold it in and answer to the Secretary of State, who would repeatedly say, evidently, to Senator Joni Ernst and others, we don't answer to you. So here's Mark Moyer, a whistleblower with Jesse last night, Cut 13.
From what I've seen so far, they seem to be doing a good job. You know, I do think you're going to need forensic accountants to go in there. It's probably going to take a long time because these bureaucrats have devised very crafty ways to hide money. So I was there in 2019, more than 2 years after the Trump administration came in the first time. We were still finding programs that the political appointees didn't know about. Now, you'd think you'd go in and say, OK, guys, tell us where the money is. But somehow, you know, that they will come up with some way excuse why they didn't give it to you. And that's partly why I think you're seeing this more heavy handed approach, because the people there were so good the first Trump term at hiding things from us and mislabeling them and slow rolling them. And, you know, you also, I think the first term, some of the Trump appointees were frankly not as vigilant as they should have been. It seems like now there's a much stronger effort and a more concerted effort to go in and get all of the information.
I just think it's a mindset that every administration has to have. Where can we cut? How do we balance the budget, let alone tackle the deficit, when the number one source of payment in America is the service on the debt? That's a crisis.
Yeah, well, so I think there are two separate issues. One is the debt and wasteful spending. And look, entitlement spending is the big driver of the debt. And you know, that has to go through Congress. That has to be dealt with with the legislative branch to pass legislation to, you know, trim some of the entitlements or trim some of the programs that are part of all the federal spending. But there's also, like, these bureaucracies, Brian, are sort of self-perpetuating. Back in the day when they began, these were small, more nimble agencies of government that may have operated more slowly than the private sector, but they generally tried to operate on you know, their mission effectively, and you had smart people who were able to accomplish goals and do it in a pretty efficient and effective way. These bureaucracies have gotten so big that they've lost sight of their mission in many cases, and you have these things that are totally at odds with what they're initially trying to do. I mean, this isn't the federal government, but at the statewide level, just think about high-speed rail that Obama spent, you know, millions and millions of dollars to try to get California high-speed rail, and it's not been done. I mean, they built like 5 miles in the Central Valley, and nothing was accomplished because the agencies that are supposed to be getting these things done and the government have become so bloated that they've lost sight of their mission. And you see this a lot in the federal government. That Elon Musk and a lot of his allies have recognized this, and they're trying to just literally, use an axe in a way we haven't seen in my lifetime, at least. But the question is, like, you know, where does this end, and what is the workforce going to look like? And you also, you know, in some agencies, you do have essential personnel. You want to make sure you kind of get rid of the dead weight, but don't get rid of the people who actually are talented and able to have the skills you need for the federal government.
I know, but, you know, the thing is, too, when you put John Ratcliffe in charge of the CIA and they say, listen, how do you feel about this? And he says, yeah, go ahead. At what point do you say, I'm going to tell you how to do your job? So I don't think John Ratcliffe was being strong-armed to make that statement. But I want you to I also want you to look on. You mentioned discretionary spending. What about non-discretionary spending, Medicare? That's where DOGE is today.
Yeah.
They're examining the $1.5 trillion Medicare and Medicaid agency. They're trying to find out where the fraud, where the waste, how many dead people are getting services, how many other people are grifting off of it. One in four Americans, they say, provides one in four Americans gets Medicare. So nobody's cutting services. We're just trying to find out, if the system is being massively defrauded and to attack it, right?
Yeah, and then look, that's the line that Musk has been saying on social media, but that's also been a line that I've heard from both Democrats and Republicans for many years. You want to get rid of the waste, fraud, and abuse, but and protect the actual spending and the programs. But I think, you know, we've seen, at least over time, we've had investigations and audits of waste, fraud, and abuse, and yes, it is there clearly, but it's probably not enough to make more than a small dent in the overall spending levels. And
maybe not, Josh. Maybe not. I mean, no one's really looked at it the way he's looking at it with the type of talent that he's got around him. You don't think there could be more than that?
Well, I think the main driver is just the fact that we're getting older as a country, and we have generous entitlements, and the
That's
tough
fine.
Decisions are really how much do you cut, or do you actually roll back some of those entitlements? You raise the age of eligibility, for instance. Those are the tougher political decisions that the Congress is going to have to tackle. Look, God, I mean, I hope he's successful in finding a lot of waste and fraud. I'm sure it's out there, but we having been covering this issue quite a bit over the years, it's not the first time the issue of waste, fraud, and abuse in these entitlement programs have come up, and in the past, at least, it's been there, but it's not been a huge amount to really change the budgetary conversation.
Josh, I'll tell you what, I'm much more optimistic than you are that no one's gone through it like he's gone through it. Not a bureaucrat going in to lean out. I think he's going to look to also simplify systems and maybe making the payments simpler that maybe could reduce some manpower with human resources. I think he thinks there's real gains to be made there, we'll see. So you're very in tune to what's happening in the Middle East. We know that Qatar's going to be hosting phase two talks. There's no scenario where Hamas can stay in power in Gaza, and there's no, from the Palestinian perspective, there's no scenario where they won't be. So where's the rubber hit the road, and how does it relate to President Trump's proposal?
Well, look, I think Trump kind of realized that there was this disconnect between the plan, which gets all the hostages released, but ultimately leaves Hamas in power, doesn't have a way to get Hamas out of power, and realizes that that was sort of untenable. And, but he also wanted to get the hostages out. He's also committed to the continued process that Steve Witkoff has been tirelessly involved in. So, I mean, I think he kind of just changed the conversation and does what he does quite a bit, which is, when people are kind of stuck in a certain way of talking about an issue, he'll go and offer something totally different way of thinking about it. I don't think you're not going to see, I don't think you're going to see people leave Gaza. I think it's going to be hard for Jordan and Egypt don't want the Palestinians. They worry that there are security threats. This has been an ongoing issue over the years. But I do think that Trump made clear the old way of thinking, the notion that the Palestinians automatically, get a state after Hamas commits one of the worst, terror attacks on October 7th, that this old way of thinking is no longer acceptable. So he really changed the conversation. And I think that dynamic alone could shake things up.
Remember, learn something from Josh. He didn't overreact. All right. He's an expert in the area. He didn't overreact. Calm down, everybody. It's going to be okay. Josh, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Kilmeade Show.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
If all of this makes so much sense, why has this not been done? You're dealing with a Congress that is divided, that many are in opposition to not only you, but your policies. So how are you going to make this come true?
Bill, if I approached my life as though, well, it's never been done before, therefore it cannot be done, I wouldn't be sitting here in this interview with you. That's the truth.
Okay, that's inspirational. That's a little of the raw video that 60 Minutes made available at the demand of the FCC chair, but they are being sued for $10 billion for going out of their way to what the Trump team says is make Kamala Harris look good. Look, Trump won, but he's trying to send a message. ABC, George Stephanopoulos comes out and calls the president, the future president at that time, the current president, a rapist. You got to be responsible for that. Evidently in his ear, he was told a couple of times, don't do it. So they just wrote the check. They got it over with. And we're seeing that time and time again. And the money is going to President Trump's library. He's not looking to put it in his pocket and make some money. So instead of going asking a bunch of donors for money, I think that he's going to have a heck of a library, and I look for another check to be written and CBS to acquiesce shortly, because do they really want more exposure? I go back, and maybe we'll pull it out, Leslie Stahl. Leslie Stahl was told when he said the laptop was real and it was fake and that Hunter Biden's pictures and the corruption with the Joe Biden family. That's not true. This is 60 Minutes. You can't just say that. Oh, yeah, it's 60 Minutes, and we're showing you could say anything.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
There have been a total of 461 illegal aliens. This is of this morning when I got this information from DHS that have been released from custody of the more than 8,000 that have been arrested since President Trump was inaugurated. It's less than 6%. And there are reasons for their release. Some of the factors include a lack of significant likelihood of removal in the foreseeable future, lack of detention availability, which is something this president and this administration has been incredibly vocal about.
So the problem is that someone gave a report that some of these guys are being arrested and let go. Well, with ankle bracelets, but they're tracked or they're given desk appearances. He goes, yeah, you're right. We don't have enough room, don't have enough beds to be able to do it, or money. And some of the money's being spent now. Defense is flying them into Gitmo. So this is one of the big successes so far. They picked over 5,000 illegal immigrants, most of which have criminal records, overstayed their visas significantly, or avoided desk appearances, usually for a reason. So they're sending people back. Guatemala put up their hand and said, we'll take even people back from other countries. I assume they're going to get reimbursed for that. And so did El Salvador, who famously arrested all their gangsters and put them in jail. You got to see some of these pictures. I mean, I'd go to bed every night afraid of a jailbreak. It would be a mass murder. But they've all had them secured. They said they'll take more. And I saw a video of Marines, Mexican Marines, 10,000 are going to be there. The first wave is already going to the southern border of Mexico. So I was listening to The Daily and The New York Times. And they're saying, well, what Trump got, they already agreed to. What are you talking about? Trump had 20,000 Mexican Marines on their southern border. That was part of their deal with Obrador. Now, and then we had the Remain in Mexico. That was part of their deal. Biden got rid of Remain in Mexico. He said it was humane. And he said he asked for 10,000 at the border. There was no proof there was ever there. We already got video that it's there. And then whatever's happening in the northern border is significantly less than the southern border. But the fact that it was picking up four times the pace, that's what caused Trump to say, wake up. So the tariffs got their attention, and then you got the border. You got the Border Patrol. They now have a fentanyl czar in Canada. That's all part of, I think, a huge focus on illegal immigrants. Tom Homan on again, expressing what's going on. Other things that are disturbing. Yesterday, you may have heard of a raid in Aurora, Colorado. In that raid, they picked up TDA, that Venezuelan prison gang. It would have been a much bigger score had, looks like, a CBS affiliate tipped off that ICE was coming in, tipped off the illegal immigrants so they could scurry out and avoid being arrested. Not all of them, but a lot of them. Same thing they're saying is happening in San Francisco. You believe this? The media siding with illegal immigrants, in many cases, illegal immigrant criminals against ICE. You're going to tell me that's going to fly? Is anyone happy about that? 1-866-408-7669. We'll discuss some of that. Just a quick announcement. Coming up, and you heard me mention before, but only a week left. VIPs, I think, are sold out, but try. On the 15th, they're going to be at Florida Theater in Jacksonville. WOKV listeners, you've done an incredible job, that station, getting word out. Rich Jones, one of their fantastic talents, is going to be on stage with me, do introductions and other things. We'll do Q&A. It's History, Liberty, and Laughs. And also on the 22nd of March, my chance to see you in person, give you an idea of America's illustrious history through my books. And we bring certain moments to life. March 22nd will be at the Factory right outside St. Louis. So that'll be great. KTFK has gotten the word out there. And we appreciate it. Mark Reardon will be on stage at one point with us, too. So we'll talk about that. And believe it or not, there will be life after the Super Bowl. There'll be life after the Super Bowl. And that'll be the week after. It's going to be fun. I'm going to be going to the Super Bowl, but not working it. I'm going to be going, and it's going to be great. We're supposed to talk to Sean Alexander shortly, an outstanding running back in the league. Sean is perfect for this Super Bowl in particular. You know why? Because for the first time in maybe 10 years, we're talking about the running game in the NFL. One of the coolest things that I liked, huge sports fan, was looking at the leading rushers. They have so de-emphasized rushing in the NFL, we didn't even know. You know, Emmitt Smith is the all-time rushing leader. I remember when he passed Walter Payton. I remember when Walter Payton passed Jim Brown. I remember when Franco Harris got close to Jim Brown. It was cool. It was like the home run race in baseball. I do remember also that Willie Mays and Hank Aaron both cleared 600 homers, and they put up Babe Ruth at 714. And I remember Willie Mays was an older 33. Hank Aaron was doing some DHing in Milwaukee, and he was able to get to 755. I think Willie Mays ended up 660. But and there was no ESPN back then, so you would kind of live in the stats. And you would sit there and stare at the leaders and see they hit two home runs the night before. Then you see the all-time list. It was always cool. Now we're talking about the running game again. I know people who in the NFL look at the NFL as entertainment think, oh, the passing is what gets ratings. I don't think so. I think people love football, love the grinding it out, love the possession. And Sean Alexander was an outstanding running back, so we'll see if we catch up to him. What happens is when you get on they're right now on Radio Row, and when you get on Radio Row, you can't cut off these interviews. So you're in the middle of an interview, and you're with San Francisco, or you're with Nashville, Tennessee, and the guy doesn't care that you have another interview in 2 minutes. You got your handler right there, so you don't know when they're going to be available. So that's what you're up against today. Before we take an early break to see if we can catch up to him, I want to bring you to Tom Brady. You know he's going to be calling his first game tomorrow. His first game as a broadcaster. He has seven Super Bowl appearances, I believe. No, seven Super Bowl wins, 10 Super Bowl appearances. I believe he's lost to the Eagles and Giants twice. But he will be calling his first game. Guess who's joining us on Fox and Friends tomorrow? Tom Brady. I don't think he's been on Fox News. I think people have gotten sound bites from him. So he's going to be with me, Lawrence, and Ainsley. And Ainsley's going to ask most of the questions. And most of them, but we've got to keep it to all football, right? By the way, she's from a football family, a sports family. So when we come back, I'll be able to take some calls, see if we can catch up to Sean Alexander. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So we're discussing everything about 60 Minutes and releasing the transcripts of their conversation with Kamala Harris, because it was edited to make her look good and strong, and she barely looked good and strong. And the raw video was let out in a promo, as it was different than the final edit that we saw on Sunday night for 60 Minutes. So it just reminded me of Ted Kennedy. And the question was so simple with Kamala Harris. Why do you want to be president? You know, and her answer, I'll play in a second. But that type of simple question, if you don't have a crisp answer, the big question is, why are you running? So Roger Mudd did an hour special with Ted Kennedy. Jimmy Carter, a remarkably unpopular president in the middle of a hostage crisis, and they knew that Ronald Reagan was coming on strong. So Ted Kennedy was the recipient of a draft Ted Kennedy tidal wave. So he sat down for an hour interview, and everyone's trying to recapture the magic of the Kennedys, both assassinated before they could truly serve the country. Only 3 years for JFK. RFK was on the cusp of just locking up the nomination when they were both brought down. So would Ted Kennedy be the one to get his two terms, at least one term? So listen to Roger Mudd question and listen to the answer.
Why do you want to be president?
Well, were I to make the announcement and to run, the reasons that I would run is because I have a great belief in this country that it is, there's more natural resources than any nation of the world.
And it got worse. And Roger Mudd said, I didn't want my career to be known for the one who brought down Ted Kennedy. I asked the simplest question possible. And when he fumbled, he would never bounce back. Plus, how do you defeat an incumbent in the Democratic Party? So Jimmy Carter, obviously, maybe if we're brought down by Ted Kennedy and the forces, maybe he would have just said, I'm not going to run again like LBJ. But they end up running, falling short, and then refusing to really endorse Carter, and it hurt him in the long run. So that was terrible, right? Terrible. Simplest question ever. It was absolutely terrible answer, and maybe because he never really wanted to run. Here's Kamala Harris, unedited 60 Minutes. Watch.
The most basic of questions. Why do you want to be president of the United States?
There are many reasons, but probably first and foremost, I truly believe in the promise of America. I do. And I love the American people. You know, we are a people who have ambition and aspirations and dreams and optimism and hope.
That's why you want to run. That's why you want to be president.
That's why I'm
president.
Running. That and some other reasons.
But you're asking the American people to make you the most powerful person on the planet. Mm-hmm. Why do you deserve the American people's votes?
Well, first of all, I have a career and a history of being very clear that I think of my role of leadership, and in particular now for the last 4 years as vice president and moving forward as president, if the voters will have me, as being a leader on behalf of all Americans.
What the heck? I mean, that is so terrible.
It was worse than Kennedy.
It was definitely worse than Kennedy. And that's why 60 Minutes sat down there, and they probably, you know what their story was? If you are really looking at a story, the story is she has no answer. So the story should have been this. When Kamala Harris was asked, she had no answer. That even should have been in the promos. That had no answer.
No, absolutely.
So it's incredible what was going on. The other media story that came out now. So the comedian that was hired, she's a writer. She's a writer for Seth Meyers, who attacked famously Donald Trump when Barack Obama was president, who attacked Donald Trump. And maybe propelled Donald Trump to run for president. And we're experiencing his second term right now. Was along with Jake Tapper on CNN. And basically was asked, do you think Donald Trump would come? Because he famously never went for 4 years because of the way he felt the unfair way the media was treating him. He didn't want to go and laugh and make light of it. And she basically says, and I'll paraphrase, nobody wants him to come. Really? Nobody wants him to come.
I predict they're going to have her step aside and someone else is going to go because he's going to show up and the mood of the country is so different. If she goes there with that tone, it is going to fall so flat.
And keep in mind, Trump doesn't mind laughing at himself. There are people that will make fun of him. That's the way it is. George W. Bush, people make fun of them. They barely made fun of Obama, though. Everyone's still afraid. So you could have fun with Donald Trump and saying he wants to buy Greenland and all these things, and you see it on and SNL, which is barely humorous, and I'm very curious to see where it goes. Danny, you're in Israel. Thanks so much for listening, Danny.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I mean, we had Benjamin Netanyahu say the Israeli people have had no better friend as president than Donald Trump. Do you feel the same way?
Totally right, Brian. Totally right. I think that all synagogues around the world should pray for President Trump this Sabbath. A special prayer. He has been the best president and friend and an ally to Israel and generally speaking to the Jews community. Now, I want to touch base exactly with that, with the plan of President Trump in Gaza. And I want to talk about a major obstacle that nobody mentioned it yet. And this obstacle is called the United Nations, the UN. Brian, they are an anti-American, anti-Semitic organization that they don't want peace in the Middle East. They want the conflict to go on. Okay? They want Hamas to survive. As far as we have a Secretary General, like Antonio Guterres, and in UNRWA, Filippo Lazzarini, there's not going to be peace in the Middle East and in Gaza. Now, look, Brian, what happened?
Okay, so people know, UNRWA is the aid organization working for the Palestinians, supposed to be for the United Nations, that is found in cahoots with the Palestinian and Hamas. In fact, some of your hostages have come out and said, I was kept in an UNRWA building. So go ahead.
Exactly. And you know what, Brian? how comes that Filippo Lazzarini was not yet investigated about those alleged suspicious crimes? How comes?
Can you tell us what that is? Tell me what you're talking about.
I'm talking about the IDF provided the UN tons of evidence that UNRWA was collaborating with Hamas. Now, the hostages say she has been held in a UNRWA facility for weeks. And now, Filippo Lazzarini, the UNRWA chief of UNRWA, should be investigated about that. We cannot close our eyes about that. It's a crime. It's a war crime.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Danny. And the other thing is, we're going to find out shortly if more hostage releases should be happening this weekend, and then we don't know how much longer they're going to continue after. John's in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, John.
Hey, Brian. Well, man, when I hear those 60-minute clips, I think of a phrase my mom used. It's a grotesque charade. But anyway, I just want to make some points about RFK Jr. real quick. First of all, if it wasn't for RFK Jr., we wouldn't even be talking about all the health problems with kids. And I would tell Bernie Sanders, when he says the science is settled, I mean, I think we're all eating fish oil now and fats, healthy fats. 20 years ago, we would have been called crazy, right?
Yep.
The other thing is the VICP, the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, put in when the Congress gave Big Pharma immunity for vaccines. That was put in with the 99th Congress, who said vaccines are unavoidably unsafe. They put in the program. It's paid out $4 billion in claims, and they say they only get about 1% of the vaccine injuries each year. So if vaccines are so safe, why do we have the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, and why have we paid out $4 billion to people?
Well, a couple of things. I want to see all the studies just evaluated. If the quality studies that say measles, whooping cough, all these other vaccines work, okay, let's just see the studies. We want to learn from the studies. But if the studies are faulty and they're sponsored by pharmaceutical companies and they haven't been done since 1971, that's a problem. The flip side of not leaving these pharmaceutical companies susceptible to being sued is that they won't take the risk of trying to get experimental drugs and trying to get the next great cancer drug and the next great cure for tuberculosis or whatever, if they think as though the downside would be they lose everything with a lawsuit. So that's what Reagan had in mind when he pushed for that. You could say that there's too many people, they're acting too cavalierly now, there's very little to lose. I understand that, but maybe there's a happy medium in there. I look forward to the exposure and not taking anything for granted, all of it, and revisiting our diet. William, listening to WTRC in South Bend. William.
Hey, Brian, thanks for taking my call. It's been a while since I spoke to you. The last guest that you had on was talking about how the Democrats, who still, to my disbelief, cannot understand that, number one, the overwhelming majority of citizens of this great United States elected Donald Trump to make the United States of America great again, and they don't get it. But with Elon Musk doing nothing more, all he's doing is auditing what's going on with every function or every aspect of the government that we're giving money away.
That's it. That's it. It's a forensic accounting. And now a judge has stopped Doge from looking into the Treasury. That's terrible. So Scott Bessent's got to pick up where they left off.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, a look into the Menendez brothers with victims or villains. Then, Judge Jeanine Pirro and a panel of experts break down their new fight for freedom with monsters or misunderstood, and follow three incredible cases where world-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Botten helps change the course of the investigation with the Botten Files. Listen and follow at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.